Welcome everyone. Today is July 30th and welcome to the session on the barcode development and related activities. We will have a panel today with several development teams presenting their efforts related to barcode and Protégé. So many of you have, were probably on the call 2 weeks ago that the Stanford team also presented these tools. And so today we will hear from others who are extending these tools ways and other, and we'll hear a couple of other related activities. So in a way of introduction, for those of you who are not on the call or may not be familiar with BioPortal, I have just a few slides to give you very brief kind of to breeze through what BioPortal is and the main functionality, and then I will turn it over to the panel to the panelists. Excuse me. So, BioPortal is a community-based ontology repository developed by the National Center for Biomedical Ontology. So, it's open, cleared of all art. Anyone can submit an ontology that's, although this, the BioPortal itself is limited to biomedical domain. So, all the ontologies are publicly available. Next slide, please. So, the repository is web accessible. It provides, in addition to providing essentially just a library function where you can deposit ontologies and find them, it also provides a number of other features that actually make it into a community-based repository. So BioPortal users can provide peer review for ontologies. They can comment on the ontologies as a whole or carry discussions about specific elements of ontologies. BioPortal supports ontology versioning in a sense that if a new version of the BioPortal ontology is developed, the developers can upload the new version, and the users can explore either the latest version or any of the previous versions and use it in their applications. BioPortal is also a repository of mappings between related concepts in different ontologies. So if there is a concept in one ontology, say heart and foundational model of anatomy, that's related to heart, say, in mouse anatomy, users can create a mapping between the two, and we will store that as a mapping, and so we'll have a fairly large repository of mappings between ontologies coming from also from our community. We provide search across ontologies. We provide a way to annotate your biomedical, your own text with terms from different ontologies, and we provide access, ontology-based access to various biomedical resources. Next slide, please. So since we're focusing on the technology today, also my next slide is on the BioPortal technology. So all the BioPortal data, if you browse if you go to the link that was on my previous two slides and browse the site, pretty much everything that you see is accessible for public REST service API, because that's really what our user interface uses for the majority of its functionality. We have a fairly detailed documentation of the REST services that give you access to ontologies, specific concepts, hierarchy information, and various ontology-based services. So I mentioned the BioPortal is for biomedical ontologies, but in fact the technology itself is domain independent. There is nothing in the BioPortal code that's specific to biomedicine, and so there are installations of BioPortal for libraries in other domains. We'll hear about some of them today. Our code is open source, and, you know, the technology stack for BioPortal is fairly deep, but it includes a number of technologies that you can see on the slide. Next slide, please. Just to give you a feeling for what how BioPortal library looks. So if you go to the website and click and get start browsing ontologies, you can see a list of different ontologies, the different and pertinent information about each of them, you know, the format, the latest version, who the ontology is from. You can also search through them and filter by different categories, or filter for a specific group of ontologies, or submit your own. Next slide, please. As of today, Peter, on my screen at least, the slide seems to be empty. Okay, there, thank you. There are about 140, this number is changing all the time, so I can keep this up to date. Ontologies in BioPortal in various formats. We support a number of formats. And among those ontologies, there are about 750,000 different classes. Next slide, please. Okay, so don't you bother. Let's move to slide 7.
Okay.
I won't actually leave more time for the panelists. Just let's move to slide 7, which talks about mappings, and I had a separate slide on that because I know that's usually general of interest. So as I mentioned, mappings, so when we talk about mappings in BarraPoetl, it's the mappings from a concept in one ontology to a concept in another ontology. It's the concept-to-concept mappings that either our users have created when browsing the BarraPoetl, we have an interface, an interactive user interface to create mappings, or the majority of mappings were actually created in other tools that our users have used or we have used offline, and then we basically just get the whole dump and upload them in bulk. So the majority of mappings in BarraPoetl are actually results of automatic or semi-automatic tools. And, of course, with the mapping, we always store the metadata on how it was created, which tools were used, who uploaded the mappings, and when. At the moment, the BarraPoetl has about 30,000 mappings, but we actually have about another million that we are in, close to a million that we are in the process of uploading. We had a development environment, and probably within the next week or two, they will appear in the production environment. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned, the technology that underlies BarraPoetl is completely domain independent, and so we have a couple of other installations running, and so we'll hear today about the repository for the Marine Metadata Initiative from the Monterey Bay Aquarium that uses the BarraPoetl as the core and then adds a lot of nice extensions to it. And then, of course, the OR repository is also running slightly earlier version of BarraPoetl that is not specific to biomedicine. And anyone can submit an ontology there in any domain. And with that, I'm about, last slide please, Peter. I'm about to turn it over to the panelists where we will hear about these different installations and other related efforts. So, Carlos Rueda, Paul Alexander, and John Graybill from Monterey Bay Aquarium will talk about one of the two repositories that I had on the previous slide, which is the AI Ontology Register and Repository. Mike Dean will discuss his thoughts on the progress of OR and issues of federation and other things. Steve Granis will talk about how to utilize, from a developer perspective, how to utilize the tools that NCBO provides, the REST services that NCBO provides to develop, how they use it to develop and use an ECG ontology, which is one of ontologies in BarraPoetl. Alex Garcia will talk about an ontology repository that uses both Protégé and BarraPoetl. It's a Protégé plugin, I think, and provides additional services. And then Ken Bakowski will talk about OR efforts at Gnosis and their relation to the efforts discussed with the rest of the panel. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Carlos, Paul, and John, and Peter will do the magic to make everyone heard. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. We are Carlos Rueda, Paul Alexander, and John Graybill, working on the Marine Metadata Interoperability Project that is hosted at the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute. So the outline for this short talk is as follows. So we will highlight some requirements from our marine community in terms of repositories and other tasks that you usually do with ontologies. Then highlight how the MMI ontology registry and repository is built on top of BioPortal. And in terms of BioPortal itself, we will discuss a few details about how we are leveraging the back end, what challenges are we have to resolve somehow, and basically the same approach for the front end. And then we will describe a few, well, basically one example of one of the modules that we are creating on top of BioPortal, and then next steps. What are we going to do next? So next slide, number 3, is our few basic requirements, most of them you will recognize them immediately as very standard in terms of ontology repositories. Maybe some of them are more related with the work that you do with ontologies, not necessarily just registering and having access to those things somewhere, but providing, for example, editing and creation of those ontologies and vocabularies. And let me just clarify that whenever I say vocabulary and ontology, we can think as interchangeable terms for the purposes of this talk. So I will just highlight some of them, like semantic query support, like in particular using Sparkle, as it is in our case. Versioning, of course, and one very particular requirement is in terms of URI resolution. We want our communities to be able to get access to these ontologies and entities inside those ontologies in a very easy way. And that means using a standard HTTP or other related URI technologies, even URNs, if with using appropriate mechanisms. In all this context, there is a big component is that we need easy-to-use tools. We need users without much expertise in ontology, in ontologies, to be able to do ontology work, even if they don't realize that they are doing ontology work. So before we started using BioPorter, we already have some tools in that direction. So this is later on I will show how we are integrating these modules that already existed and the new ones that we are creating. And everything is community-driven by definition, I will say, because many of these vocabularies are just going to be created. So we need to support that process and also integrate and leverage existing vocabularies that come from different Open Geospatial Consortium efforts and others. So slide number four. So the MMI Ontology Resilient Repository is basically the BioPortal infrastructure plus a few modules that we have created. We are using both the back and the front end, and it's important to clarify that because, as you may know, these two are independent components, basically, in the sense that you can just use the back end and on top of that maybe use the front end provided by BioPortal or even other front ends. So MMI modules that existed, that have been available for some time, are for creation of vocabularies and conversion from text-based or spreadsheets and things like that to RDF. We have added a metadata management based on OMV, that is the ontology metadata vocabulary, plus some that extensions that we have created. We, in terms of the URI that I was mentioning before, we have a mechanism for resolving both version and non-version URI. Again, URI resolution is a key component here, as I will show later also. We have a tool called Vine that is for mapping, for creation of mappings between terms in different vocabularies. We have added an Sparkle endpoint on top of BioPortal, and we have some other modules, and I will show an experimental front end for administrative tasks. In slide number five is a collage of screenshots that pretty much show the various components that we have integrated. So you will see in the upper left the familiar BioPortal front end. Actually, this is from a previous release of BioPortal, so it might not be exactly as it is right now, but that's the release we're using. And others like the ones I mentioned before. Slide number six is about the backend. So basically no changes are in the BioPortal backend, and that's, of course, the purpose, right? You have an interface based on, in this case, on REST calls. Ideally, ideally, any client should be able to use those operations and be able to provide added functionality. However, and we are doing that for different things, like listing the ontologies, submitting the ontologies, getting access to different versions of the same ontology, and so on, and for logging purposes as well. However, as I said, URI is an important component for us, and I think for everybody. So we have added a few operations that can access the database in the backend directly. So even though that we haven't changed anything in the backend, we are accessing the database directly, not using the REST, because there is no currently a REST code for doing some of these tasks. I already said that we have a Sparkle on top of the BioPortal using the Jena library. Okay, line number 7. Paul, can you say it?
So slide number 7 we're actually going to skip over in the interest of time. This is essentially a list of configuration that would need to be done to the front end in order to get it to run on top of the documentation that's already provided, and hopefully we'll be able to work with BioPortal and get this included later on. But that's kind of there as a reference. If you have any questions, feel free to contact me directly on that. Slide 8, if we look there, we can talk about some of the challenges I saw when working with the front end moving forward. Internationalization. If there are communities that are working internationally and would like to have a translated version of the front end, I didn't see a clear path to that from what's there now. So that would be an item for discussion at some point, to talk about maybe streamlining that a little bit. If you wanted to deploy BioPortal as an installation of your own somewhere, it will take a little bit of developer experience, I think, to do it. It's not as easy as dropping a bunch of files into a directory on a web server and then running an automated setup. It does require a little bit of knowledge to get going, including setting up a Rails environment, things like Memcache and some more advanced technologies. It does also require, if you're doing any modifications of any kind, a bit of Rails knowledge. And that can be a challenge finding experienced developers, depending on the market that you're in and availability of people. Also, a considerable portion of the front end is now in Flex, at least for some of the more advanced features like search and annotate. And we didn't find modifying the Flex as straightforward as some of the other things that were modifiable. And there are some branding items, like the name of the BioPortal, that are in the Flex that we that I didn't see an easy way to change, so I'm not sure of the current status of that, but when we were deploying it, it wasn't straightforward. And one of the great things about BioPortal, I think, is that they have rolled out a ton of new features since we started working with it. Unfortunately, as, one developer working less than part-time, it was tough to keep up. So that is a challenge, trying to work with the system. I think that's it for this. We can go on to slide 9, and Carlos will take back over.
Thank you. Thank you. Also, yes, in the slide number 9, this is an example of one of our new modules. This is a pretty recent one in which we have a few goals, and I will just summarize very quickly. One is to experiment with the REST calls, and this is somehow a preparation for when the time comes to deploy the newest release of BioPortal, and also to gain experience in how to develop other potential front ends on top of the BioPortal backend. So in this case, it's facilitating some maintenance tasks like deletion of ontologies or reassigning the ownership of who submitted or who is the owner of the ontology for purposes of who is able to create new versions and so on. Slide number 10, next steps. So in the backend, of course, our plan, maybe not for the very short term, but somehow later this year, is to update to any latest release at that point of the BioPortal or OOR release. So depending on how that goes, continue evaluating the REST services, and we would like to continue promoting and handling and having support for URIs, even from the BioPortal infrastructure itself. So right now, it's it uses keys that are more internal than external. We have some metadata, or as I said, that we would like to align this therefore with current work that BiPortal is doing in terms of metadata in general that includes many, many aspects of metadata. So we need to start doing that. For our mappings, also keep an eye on what BiPortal is doing, but also in evolving our own tool that has been used for a couple of years already. We are working on rehosting ontologies, even though the BiPortal is agnostic about the namespace of the submitted ontologies. We have some infrastructure that we need to adjust appropriately for full handling of those cases. Other things like groups, projects, permissions, and so forth. In the front end, so we need, as Paul has suggested, a few aspects in terms of how we can continue developing and integrating our efforts in terms of the look and feel of the new front end, to have some mechanisms to facilitate the branding of a new deployment of BiPortal. I think that's very important as well. For visualization, we have had this requirement of being able to visualize individuals. And as far as I know, BiPortal doesn't have support yet for that in the Flex component. In general, we want to continue this integration efforts and continue collaborating with OR, BiPortal, and even include other a more closer connection with the other Stanford technologies like Protege. We're trying to integrate Web Protege and Collaborative Protege and the Collaborative Ontology Development Server effort as well. Other work that we can do with NEON. All of these hand in hand with developing or promoting solutions for their science communities. The broader vision in terms of semantic technologies is to promote these interrepository APIs and getting to a point in which we are sharing the same metadata, standards in metadata for ontologies, and that should be extensible, of course, and that's our vision. So thank you very much. So these are some links to our deployment and some other documentation. Thank you. Hello?
Natasha?
Oh, so I'm unmuted. Sorry, I didn't hear that. Thank you. Are there any questions at this point? We will have a general discussion at the end, but if there's some specific questions about this presentation, I think we can have a few minutes for that.
I guess we had better hold off all the discussion,
okay,
because lining up people is always a challenge.
Okay, so yeah, let's, in the interest of actually finishing this panel today at some point, let's move on to Mike Dean from DBN. Mike, you're on.
Yeah, Mike's slides are on, but if you had opened your session page much earlier, you probably want to refresh that page before you can see Mike's slides.
Here, I'll wait till you bring up the slides.
Okay, yes, please. Thank you. Right. Yeah, I have it on the shared screen.
Okay. Great, thank you. Natasha mentioned my title before. Basically, this is sort of a collection on several different thoughts. I had hoped to actually ground some of these things with some running code, but I haven't gotten to that yet, but still hope to in the near future. Peter, why don't you go on the second slide? Can folks hear me okay? Okay. Let's see. So in terms of, in general, kind of in progress on OOR, I know that it, you know, often when you're in the midst of a project, it seems like it's moving slowly, but in general, I'm actually quite pleased with the progress, and particularly, you know, the really enormous contributions of the BiPortal team, Peter at Sim3, and the regular telecom participants that we have on our BiReviews telecast. I think that the our bootstrapping process of cross-referencing proposed projects seems to be off to a good start. But one of the things I'm hoping that we can kind of revisit is some of the ideas from the Ontology Summit of supporting really composable modules and making it easier for different organizations to basically stand up their own OOR instances, public or private. That certainly alludes to some of the comments in the last talk about the skills required basically to employ another instance. And I think, as we get more instances, that will almost inherently become easier as we refine the process and the software there. Why don't you go ahead to the next slide, Peter? Slide three. So one of the things that I'm particularly interested in is federation of registries and repositories, particularly because I think this is a potential discriminator for OOR, something that other folks haven't worked with a lot in the past. So recently I've been working with a couple environments that I've actually considered to be good candidates for federation for quite some time. So one of those is a commercial product called Noodle that's a collaborative ontology development environment. And we actually use that at the VOCamp, which is a sort of a get-together where people bring their laptop and a sleeping bag and work on a vocabulary in a given domain for the weekend, which is an interesting experience. And this kind of collaborative ontology editing environment worked quite well, particularly in that type of setting. The other thing is Semantic Media Wiki Plus, which there have been several presentations on recently in the Ontolog series that we were using on a DARPA seedling. And some of the motivation for being able to federate with these things is that I think people will want, many people will want to continue to use the current collaborative vocabulary development environments that they're using. And I'm sort of using vocabulary as kind of a generalization of ontologies to include RDF schema and things like that. Next slide. In terms of the capabilities for anybody that isn't familiar with these, sort of a loose characterization is, Noodle focuses primarily on LDL and basically provides good collaborative web-based support for what you could think of as sort of standard ontology editing, where you have basically domain experts that are really focused primarily on the task of building the ontology. SMW, in contrast, really supports essentially RDFS, RDF schema, with a few little tweaks and differences. The vocabulary creation is really kind of a side effect of actually building, Wikipedia-style collaboration, including structured annotations. This still, it's a little more, somewhat more ad hoc and side effect process, it still may contain quite valuable knowledge about the domain. And there's also been some work, I think, on several projects basically in combining these types of tools. So Noodle is actually based on a wiki. I think it was originally based on MediaWiki, in fact. And, I think there's nice potential in terms of doing that. So next slide, please. So both of them actually support Sparkle endpoints and RDFNL export capabilities. And I've been thinking a little bit about, sort of the ways that you actually get the data out of them and, into an OOR instance. And so one option basically is something like Sparkle Construct Queries that basically map their metadata representations, into OMV, particularly for the information, background information on the ontology itself. Construct queries to map relevant aspects of the actual vocabularies, particularly the classes, properties, and their relations between them. Another alternative really is just to export the vocabularies directly, from those tools and re-import them into OOR. And there's a slightly more dynamic option, which may or may not work well, of actually essentially just importing the export link as a way of getting access to the data. I'm not sure if that really is terribly viable or not, but it could work. So a couple questions I had about the current, OOR implementation based on BioPortal, and, we could defer these to the discussion, but one was basically whether there's a current ability basically to really link back to an external authoritative source, other than just essentially for the URI of the ontology itself. Because I think it's important for people to, and I think most of the focus on BioPortal has been really as a repository rather than just as a registry. But I think basically being able to indicate that someplace else is really authoritative would be helpful there. And, and this is mostly lack of my detailed knowledge at this point, but, the question is sort of how to handle versioning and bulk import of changes, since these will presumably be continuing to evolve at the authoritative sources. Next slide. So another topic that actually came up when I was working with the sandbox implementation that I don't think has been addressed, I thought about the time about sending some email to the mailing list. I thought I'd use this opportunity. Is the question of basically how to handle vocabularies that consist of multiple files or pages? I think it was Dublin Core that I was actually trying to import kind of as an experiment when this came up. And things like Dublin Core basically have multiple files or pages that often reflect, some partitioning, based on modularity or, other significant attributes of the ontology that are probably quite useful to capture. In the large case of very large ontologies, there could be a hierarchical relationship between these things. And the question is really how we should handle these in OOR. So next slide. So, several possible approaches. Probably not exhaustive, is, one is to basically just load each of the files independently and, provide, whatever capabilities exist basically for providing some cross-reference structure between them, perhaps beyond, there may also be, internal references and imports between these things, but I don't think we necessarily should depend on those, and, those may be more complex than sort of just the relationship basically between the a half dozen or so component files that actually exist in the ontology. Some level of metadata support, I think that would be quite helpful. The other option is to basically load the single file that imports the other file, kind of the assumption here that you're almost hiding the internal structure and but actually getting access to the aggregate information. And the disadvantage there essentially is that you may be losing information that would actually be quite valuable. The third option that, if it isn't there already, I think would actually be a useful notion is really to directly support the notion of multiple file ontologies, in the underlying metadata structure and really being able to essentially let the user control essentially whether he wants to see and be aware of those boundaries or not. And, I'm unfortunately not quite sure what which of these options BioPortal currently supports, but I'd be interested in finding out. Next slide. Peter, sorry. Is this the last slide? Or there's actually another slide that I added at the end that I will post to the wiki afterwards. And that is basically a new effort that I'm starting that basically is working more with rules, particularly a project called Silk that was announced at CIMTEC and the International Conference on Logic Programming. And my goal, one of my side goals basically, is to eventually integrate this with OOR. And it has, I think some new requirements, but which are actually fairly similar to the support for common logic that I think we'll be hearing about later. Basically, that's really, somewhat more direct support for rules, basically, for implications beyond those directly from the ontology, and support for predicates that are more than unary and binary. Silk will be interchangeable using WCBC-RIF, which is basically nearing the end of the standardization process, and they're actively soliciting feedback on that, by the way. So OR support for RIF might be a good kind of standard stepping stone to supporting Silk and other languages. So that's it. So thank you guys very much, and I look forward to hearing the rest of the presentation.
Thank you, Mike. So I would like to answer a couple of your specific questions, and then I think we decided to leave the discussion to the end of, after the panel.
That'd
so
be great.
On the specific questions, so you asked what VAR portal does with imports and multiple files, and at the moment we're basically, if we get an OWL file that imports others, we just load it as a single file, and then we bring in all the imports, and so the namespaces, when you look at the concept, the namespace is your only indicator.
Okay.
Done anything more module, right? We know it would be nice to do, but also know it's extreme, it's a huge can of worms. So we're
but
still,
I know it,
and we're still trying to figure out how best to address it. On ability to link back to an external authoritative resource, when you submit an, I'm not sure if that's what you meant, but when you submit an anthology to VAR portal, you do put a link for to the page, you know, where as part of the metadata where the
that's right, yes.
So we have that, we do store that information, and then on versioning, you can upload the new version with it. We can take just the changes from you because there's really no standard format to represent changes, so
right.
I wouldn't know what to do with that. We will take a new version from you, and we will generate a diff sort of in our format that you can take and process or, you know, use your own diff. But basically, for the versioning, we take the new version and not the changes.
Okay, right.
All
right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Steve Granite, are you on the call now?
Natasha, I can see Ravi's hand up.
Okay.
Do you have an urgent question, Ravi?
Natasha, with your permission, one quick question to
sure.
Mike. The purpose of integrating metadata, vocabularies, and terms is intuitively clear, but did you have any end objectives, Mike, by particularly things like Dublin Core integration?
Well, I was using Dublin Core here essentially just as an example. One of the things I tried to do with the sandbox was to load some of the most commonly used vocabularies, you know, partly as a way of testing the machinery and you know, kind of to get some examples up there, since, you know, these are certainly things that people would want to use. You know, I think certainly, you know, using Dublin Core as, you know, is a good vocabulary for describing some of the aspects of ontologies. I recently kind of discovered the DC source actually is a good way of linking back essentially sort of derivative works for translation and things like that. So that's kind of a good example.
I don't know their current status, but when they were developed, the Dublin Core metadata were more taxonomy-based and hierarchical
Some sort of rough edges, you know, particularly in the fact that most of them essentially deal with literals rather than resources, which is kind of unfortunate. But I think that they're, you know, with the subsequent revisions, that they're evolving and adding, you know, more depth in terms of the subproperty characterizations of the kind of the core, you know, dozen or so properties that were originally defined.
Would you then find a prescription for executable ontologies? Is that the purpose?
I missed a word there. I'm sorry.
Executable software, automated executable ontologies, which would then take into the code the semantics from vocabularies and terms and metadata.
That would certainly be great, but I think I'm thinking more of smaller steps, you know, along the path to
it. Yeah, but that's a long-term goal.
Right, yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
May I suggest two things? One, if we have discussions that people could use the chat board and sort of type out the questions first. One, it gets documented and also saves it so that you can remember what question to ask the particular speakers. And secondly, this session is mainly related to tools and not content. And we have another session next Thursday on research issues that are open to both, the scope of which are open to both tools and contents. So if we could focus our attention on tools development, that would probably be a good use of everyone's time. Okay. Back to Natasha.
All right. So let's move on. Steve, are you there?
Steve, you need to press *3 on your keypad and try to make sure we can all hear you. Stephen Granite? *3 on your phone keypad.
Okay, yes.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, we can hear you now. Fantastic.
You're on.
All right. So, I guess I need to refresh. So the title of my talk, as I have sent in, is Utilizing NCBO Tools to Develop and Use an ECG Ontology. I am the project manager for the Cardiovascular Research Grid, which is an NHLBI-funded resource project that is meant to develop resources for the biomedical community. So if you move on to slide 2, Peter. We are, as I said, a community resource, and our plan is for working for the distributed management, semantic description, federation, and analysis of both primary and derived cardiovascular data. So what we've been working on doing for about the past 2 years is developing new cardiovascular-specific data management resources, delivering cardiovascular data analysis tools and customized workflows to the cardiovascular community, attempting to create easy-to-use, customized interfaces for accessing the cardiovascular resources, and, as best we can, providing these resources in a secure manner. So if you move on to slide 3, Peter. So through a driving biological project with the NCBO, the CVRG has been working to use NCBO tools, namely Protégé and BioPortal, to develop, manage, and actually access a comprehensive ECG ontology. Our original plan was to use BioPortal to find pre-existing concepts and note what ontologies they were in, then use Protégé to develop the ontology. We would actually load the other ontologies into Protégé and use their concepts through basically in OWL file mappings to use them and not actually have to transcribe them. And then finally, once we had gotten enough concepts into our OWL ontology, use BioPortal to store and manage the ontology that we had developed. While we were working through this, we had developed a new plan with the BioPortal Representational State Transfer Services, the REST services, to develop a tool to utilize those services and obtain pre-existing concepts and definitions from other ontologies and then export them in OWL. And then once we had exported these terms into an OWL file, we would use Protégé to extend that OWL file with novel electrocardiogram or ECG concepts, and then yet again use the BioPortal to store and manage the ontology. So if you move on to slide 4, Peter. So what are the benefits of this kind of tool? What we had built into this tool was initially with the idea of concept provenance. So what we would be doing is actually citing the ontology that we had as the source of the concept and get that definition from that ontology. And at the time that we cite the ontology and obtain the definition, get a time date stamp for the information capture so that we are able to maintain the concept provenance by at least referencing the ontology and knowing precisely when we had gotten the definition. We'd also then be able to, in that concept, obtain a subset of pre-existing ontologies quickly. The original plan, as I described, had required importing entire ontologies to use just a few of the concepts within those ontologies. Namely, in the ECG ontology, we were looking at using the foundational model of anatomy for the anatomical structure concepts, and then looking for harmonization and other purposes to use EKG wave concepts from the National Cancer Institute, the NCI's thesaurus. And then finally, the enhancement that would come from this tool of concept mapping to pre-existing ontologies, because the concepts and their definitions would be exactly the same. In theory, we haven't quite applied this quite yet, it would make mapping fairly easy to do, and then possibly in the future, something that would be automatable. So we saw all these as benefits of this tool, and I do admit there are some, at least at the current time, shortcomings, further development for the tool, but these upfront benefits look to be of good use to us. So if you advance to slide 5, Peter. This shows a screen capture of a command line instance of this tool, and we actually have developed at least a prototype of a web interface to this tool that is referenced from the CVRG webpage, which I will give at the end of this talk. So in this Q's case that you see here in this screenshot, what is going on is we're searching for the term or the string EKG in the NCI thesaurus. And what is going on here in this screen is I'm echoing each and every one of the REST calls that are being executed. So the first thing that the tool does is it goes and looks at the BioPortal ontologies to get all of the ontologies. And then in those ontologies, it's searching for the NCI thesaurus. So once it finds that, it's able on the next line, as you see there, to search for the string EKG against the ontology ID. Oops. Sorry, I guess you would advance. That's right. Against the ontology ID 1032, which is the ontology ID for the NCI thesaurus. Then in searching that ontology, it had found all of the other lines that you're seeing afterwards. And so through this next REST call, what it does is it looks up inside the most recent version of the NCI thesaurus the term electrocardiography, then EKG concept, electrocardiographic chain, EKG delta wave, on down all the way through at the end, an EKG finding the right atrial enlargement. Every one of the concepts that had been brought back through this search, through this tool. So now if you can advance to the next slide, Peter. Then this was able to write those results into an AL file, which I have opened up here in Protégé. This is Protégé 3.3. And in there, I understand it's a little hard to see from this view, but if you're able to see or have the PDF up yourself, in the specific EKG delta wave, I had gone and used the Dublin Core to make it, so I am a creator. I understand this probably instead to be a publisher curator, but I was the creator of this instance of this concept at this precise date, which I had run this back in March of this year at very early in the morning. And then on the description that you see here is the description that is actually in the definition for this term or concept in the NCI thesaurus, and last but not least, the Dublin Core source reference points to the NCI thesaurus. So down at the bottom of the screen, you'll see a hyperlink to the BioPortal at the NCBO, where if you click that link, it will take you to the most recent version of the NCI thesaurus. And in that most recent version of the NCI thesaurus, we have of the ECG ontology. In that most recent version of the ECG ontology, we cite not only the NCI thesaurus, but also the foundational model of anatomy. So we've taken several of the FMA concepts using this tool, and we're able to integrate them into our ontology. And then with the NCI thesaurus, you would go and see, I think, the EKG P wave is in there, along with the EKG QRS complex, not to get too deep into ECG waveforms, but there was not a T wave for an entire ECG complex. You need P, Q, R, S, and T wave. So once we had been able to add a T wave into our ontology, we were able to take the terms from the NCI thesaurus and integrate them into a full structural definition of a PQRS T wave or a known ECG wave. So if you advance to the next slide, Peter. Slide 7. While we have developed this ontology, we had also been looking to actually use it in a web interface that we've been developing. So what we had developed was a prototype widget, an ECG widget, that leverages the Google Web Toolkit, which I've noted here in this hyperlink where to access that, and then also the Google Visualization API. So with this prototype that we developed, I'll show you screenshots on the next slide in a second, but it can exist in a portal, it can exist on a web page, in a dashboard, actually on a flash drive. We have done this ourselves, been able to set up a flash drive instance where we have Tomcat embedded in the flash drive and are able to basically bring up this tool on anyone's machine, be it PC or Macintosh, and last but not least, or a handheld device, which would be a G3 phone. So this expands the avenues of access to this tool by putting it in the hands of the users, and it makes it so that it can function on multiple platforms and multiple browsers without issues that generally involve going through asynchronous JavaScript and XML that had been times past. And then another nice function of this, we had tested it ourselves by being able to translate between English and German. We were able to verify that, but it actually can internationalize the tools that are developed without requiring additional code. So we are now moving on to making sure it can translate properly into Spanish, but at least with the German translation, we felt very good about what this tool would be able to do. So if we move on to slide 8, Peter. This is showing an example of this tool. So the functionality that had been implemented when in times past, we had had two separate workflows, and this tool allowed us to unify the workflow. And so it's able to accept multiple ECG formats and store them in one format behind the scenes, and the tool itself actually allows for in-memory translation to other formats, but then it extends capabilities that we didn't have before, where it actually allows users, as you can see in the screen, on the right-hand side in that screenshot, you're actually seeing an ECG waveform. And what this allows the user to do is actually be able to go in and annotate the waveform, leveraging the REST services real-time. So in the left-hand picture, what you're seeing is the screen that pops up. And so the user at the current time has to enter the position that they want to make the annotation, namely the second interval and then the millivolts. But once they've done that, if they go into the ontology box and enter one of the ontological terms, just by putting the cursor in there, if they start to type something, it does a REST call to the bioportal and looks at the ontology REST service and returns the entire set of IDs that are in the ECG ontology. So that once you've selected one of those, then if you transfer your cursor into the annotation, it does another REST call and looks up, namely, the concept REST service. And in looking up the concept REST service, returns the definition in the annotation field so that the user has the actual definition that is in the ontology and they are able to add more details into the annotation. So it's just when they hit the save button, it actually goes and refreshes the screen that you see on the right, and you'll notice that in that screen, I hadn't mentioned it before, but the annotation is displayed. So, and then if I have Peter move on to slide 9. Information on the CVRG can be found at cvrgrid.org, and the actual tool that I had mentioned before that is able to query the bioportal is in our GeForge site under a NCBO DBP project, and we're going to be adding the CVRG ECG interface that I just shown you there to that project as well. And if you would advance to slide 10, I had seen in the chat window, in slide 10, we'd like to acknowledge definitely the Protégé team for all its work and the bioportal development team, but we'd also leverage the ontology access package and would like to thank Clement. And then in my team itself, I'd like to especially thank Bill Gerton and the rest of my team, but we'd like to cite that this, again, is an R24 project funded by NCLBI and then also developed as part of this NCBO Driving Biological project. And so I think with that, that was my last slide. I'm not sure if I – no. I had seen a question here. So on the chat window – okay. The first question goes into asking, can I go beyond the synthetic? I guess if Robbie wants to ask them himself, since both questions come from him.
Well, I, but I, looking at the In the chat window, there are more, it seems, also about the content. So in the interest of time, Ravi, if you don't mind, maybe we could take that later in the general discussion, or maybe this can be resolved in the chat.
Okay.
Presentations to go through.
I've already been putting them in the chat window, so it's fine. Either they can take at the end or whenever.
Okay. Well, we can definitely take them at the end.
Thank you, Stephen. This is, I think, a great example of the use of the tools and the REST services without actually having to install any instance on your own. And really, I think when we talk about repository, it's important that it not only provides a library function, but also gives programmatic access to it. Any specific questions on the implementation? Steve? All right, so then let's move on. Alex Garcia is our next speaker. We'll talk about his work on the tool that also integrates BioPortal and Protégé. Alex, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Sam. Thanks, Natasha. Before starting, just let me say that this is the first time I try to do this over an iPhone. So if my connection breaks down, it means my battery has just dead. So excuse me for that. This is a very brief presentation about the work that we are doing at Uni Bremen. My name is Alexander Garcia, and I'm working at the University of Bremen in Germany. So we are involved in a European project, and the European project aims to standardize the vocabulary across assistive technology. So we deal with things like health monitoring systems, health sensor technology, spatial and temporal representation. And we work with heterogeneous ontologies and distributed communities. People developing the ontologies are usually domain experts in our case, and they are usually in everywhere around Europe. Why are we, what's the motivation for us to work in these? Well, we have to support the development of ontologies within our decentralized environment. That means that we have to make things easier for domain experts so they can express what they want to express in the ontologies as they build them. We are just assisting them in the formalization of the ontologies. We also have to, this is one of our main aims, and it is facilitating the connectivity issue across ontologies in the form of formalized mappings. And for this, we are doing some research in the realization of the big connections idea. And we would also like to see some distributed reasoning across those ontologies that we are hosting in our ontology repository. The name for our ontology repository is ORAPI, and this is built upon BioPortal technology. So basically, what our software infrastructure has two sides, and one is the
Alex.
One is
could you tell us to advance the slides, because we will have a lot of people who will be downloading the recording, and they wouldn't know if you are advancing slides unless you tell us so.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
We should be.
I'm slide four.
Okay. Good. Sorry.
So our software infrastructure has, on one hand, BioPortal technology, and this is the portal technology we're using to host our mappings and also our ontologies. And on the ontology development side, we are using Protégé 4. For Protégé 4, we have built some extensions, such as, for instance, a plugin that is OLS2O. It's an ontology lookup service. It has been developed, it has been deployed. We are currently working on a data master plugin. This is something that already exists for Protégé 3.4. We are just helping in the migration to Protégé 4. And the other plugin that is on the pipe is Olink Maps. And this is a plugin that aims to help people to create mappings across ontologies on the client side, meaning on Protégé. And by mapping, we are considering the situation where we want to map more than two ontologies. Say, for instance, that we want to build mappings across five or six ontologies. So slide number five, and this is the ontology lookup service to all. This is a primitive plugin that we just built. It supports the work in the ontology. It supports the work of the ontology engineer in that it helps ontology engineers to figure out which ontologies can they reuse and it facilitates, I mean, in that sense, it facilitates reusability. Basically, what this plugin does is that this plugin allows people to build queries and execute the queries against several repositories at the same time. Currently, we are working with Watson, Swoogle, and BioPortal. It also allows, and this is something not currently supported, but it's something we're currently working on, slicing. And it means, by slicing, I mean that we would like to the people to be able to take a piece of the ontology and produce it in another ontology. The other plugin we will start to work on, OLS2O is out there. You can download it. This is one that I'm presenting on the slide number six. Olin Maps, this is something I'm currently working on. I'm designing this plugin, and this is a pretty good plugin. It should allow people to load, visualize, and manipulate mappings. So, slide number seven. So Orate, which is based on BioPortal, is our server company. It allows, and it currently allows the visual generation of mappings. So we see mappings are as informal e-connections, and we want to have better formalized mappings. So we want to move forward than the initial idea of the mapping and go into something more formal, something that can support some distributed reasoning. And for that, we are doing some research on e-connections. Next slide, well, that's the last slide, and that's just to present some of the outcomes and deliverables. The URL you see there is the URL for the Proteoport plugin that we just developed, and those are a couple of papers we wrote. So I think that's it for me. Sorry for being such a hurry, but I didn't know that the battery of the iPhone was so bad.
Okay, over to Natasha. Natasha, you may be on mute.
Thank you.
Yes.
Are there any questions? Okay, so I think with that we'll move to our final presentation by Ken Maslowski, and then we'll have a discussion after Ken's presentation. Ken, please.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm just going to be presenting, hopefully this will be fairly brief, some of the activities related to the OOR taking place at Northeastern University. If you look at slide two, there's kind of an outline of what I would like to talk about today. We're working on web service interfaces and integrating with semantic wikis. And but one more interesting aspect of this is the relationship to education and testing of the OOR. So if you move to slide three, you'll see the so the first thing we're working on was web service interfaces with a number of students that are working on this. The REST interface is really very good. It's currently supported, and it's actually less limited than perhaps I mentioned there on the slide. It's quite a comprehensive interface to OOR at this point. However, there are applications that are more suitable to a SOAP interface. These are cases where you want to integrate the use of the OOR into, you know, more deeply into a programming language and component framework. SOAP is not yet supported, and we hope to be able to introduce this, and not just introduce it just as a SOAP interface, but to try to develop it using an ontology-based approach. And I actually have a slide indicating a potential architecture that could be supported using this kind of interface. The idea is to regard the API itself as being an ontology, so that it isn't just a kind of ad hoc interface or even just a programming language interface, but one that has semantics associated with it, and you formalize the semantics in an ontology. And if you take this approach systematically, then the OOR could actually be a kind of enhanced web services registry that would go beyond even what current web service registries support. That's a more long-term research issue, so I'll skip over that, and maybe I'll talk about that more in the meeting next week. The slide after that gives you a feeling. This is number four for the kind of deep structure that you can have in the OOR ontology, separating out the kind of top-level ontology, repository, metadata, and working your way all the way down to the point where you reach data. You start annotating data that isn't even in the OOR. So moving on to slide five, another interesting topic that we're working on is integration with semantic wikis. This is similar in many ways to what Mike Dean talked about. What we found is that there are actually two directions involved in this kind of integration. You can kind of look at it from the point of view of the semantic wiki, or from the other side of, you know, looking at the semantic wiki from the point of view of the OOR. And they're somewhat different, because there's limitations that semantic wikis have, especially the semantic media wiki framework, which is makes it kind of difficult. As Mike Dean mentioned, it's really basically just RDFS. So if you wanted to get some more sophisticated ontologies, it would be kind of hard to do it in just a pure wiki framework. However, it looks like there may be ways of dealing with that, although that's more of a long-term research issue. But anyway, it's nice that, you know, we could see this as a way of getting the OOR. The OOR could then be accessible to individuals who perhaps are not as ontology engineering savvy as the rest of us are. And that could make it, you know, have a much larger clientele for the OOR. Moving on to slide number six. Now, this is one that I think is kind of would be really interesting. It turns out I'm teaching a fall course on web services and components, and it is a really popular course. It's full at this point, 40 students registered and other students waiting in line. And my intention is to actually introduce the OOR in the course and to have students using the OOR as part of their assignments, and it would seem to me this would be a really good test of the OOR because of the large number of students and the diversity of the kinds of things they'll be doing with the OOR. The intention is that they're going to be using it not just from the GUI point of view, but also from the web service access point of view, and even from within a programming language, so that they would more naturally want to use a SOAP interface. In addition, they are computer science students in the class, so they would also like be very interested in looking at the OOR, the BioPortal software right now, and getting some understanding of it from the point of view of software engineering. So anyway, there's some interesting aspects of this are that although we have current students that are working on it, after the course, I would expect that a number of students would follow up with research projects based on their experience in the course. As I I said, it's a really popular course, and students are really enthusiastic about the what they're going to be learning. And I might add, you know, I mean, this could be a kind of a prototype of courses that could be offered elsewhere that would introduce the OOR. In the process of, well, even currently with students hitting the OOR sandbox, they started to hit problems, and this is good because it's a good way to do testing. When students started doing multiple concurrent uploads from the same site, they started getting problems. Uploads didn't finish parsing, large ontologies were failing. It's a good way, I think, of really getting some experience with the sandbox, and, you know, really working out some of the problems that it might have. So as I'm saying, I guess this is basically the last slide. You just expect a lot of activity in the fall on slide 7. Students being computer science students could really, as I say, both help with testing and even help with some with resolving the problems, since they do have a lot of experience in software engineering. The last slide is just talking about some of the funding initiatives that we're working on, and I don't think that's maybe really appropriate at this meeting. Okay, so can we, Natasha, can you then?
Yes, thank you. So I would like to thank all the presenters for very interesting presentations. And I think we saw sort of a variety of ways in which different tools can be used or integrated, either as a separate instance that you can then extend, or through calling the REST services. And in many cases, sort of from the point of view of the bar-portal team, we would rather expand the set of our REST services to let people, to give people access to the functionality. Because then, I mean, as I mentioned in the beginning, one of the core ideas behind BioPortal and, in fact, any OR is probably the fact that it's a community registry, so that it would benefit more from actually more people coming to one site. That having been said, I would like maybe to kick off the discussion with the point that Mike has brought, and actually several other people have brought up, that so this is all nice and good, but we really need to think about federation. And the centralized model will not work in all cases. And in fact, sort of even for biomedical ontologies, it may not always work because there are issues like data that people just don't want to share, data and ontologies that people may want to sort of have locally, either because they're earlier versions that are still in testing, for example. And so how can all these instances be integrated or federated? And what is required for federation? And I'll start that poll, and that is probably a good way to start the discussion. Or if there are any other questions, let's start there. Any comments from anyone?
Yeah, can I slip in a sort of administrative remark? This would be a good time for people to click on the hand button if you already know where it is. If you don't, it's sort of on the lower right side of your chat window. And if you're not already on the chat session, the session page near the top, there are a few bullets on how to join. The second bullet tells you how to get into the chat session. And if you can get into the chat session, that would be the best way to queue yourself up for Q&A and discussion. And in case you're just on the phone and do not have access to the browser, I guess you can start unmuting yourself, do a *3, and at least let Natasha know that you would like to speak. So for now, if anyone wants to be queued up for discussion, this is a good time to click on that hand button. I see Carlos' hand up. Peter, my hand is up, and this is a good time. And I guess then Natasha can call on people to discuss in that order, or Natasha might call on our panelists. I mean, if the questions are addressed to specific panelists' presentation. So back to you, Natasha.
So, Carlos, you're on first.
Oh, well, thank you, Natasha. Yes, this is a question regarding the REST services. So my question is if there is going to be, or maybe there is already, a mechanism similar to SOAP in terms of facilitating the communication with the server. So in a way that is easy to parse the response and to even create the request. Make sense?
Can you give specific examples of the type of things you would want to do that you don't think REST? I mean, I know there are such examples, but at the moment we haven't had, you know, anyone really banging around the door and saying, give us SOAP, so.
This question was actually triggered by Ken's presentation in which he emphasizes this SOAP mechanism, this SOAP interface, and as far as I know, so SOAP provides all these envelopes and programmatic mechanisms for creating the request and also to facilitate the parse, so the parsing of the response. So, so far, for example, in our case, we do this in a very ad hoc way. So even though that the specification is in a document, you describe what the signatures of the request to the BioPortal backend, and you provide examples of how the response is going to look like. I'm wondering if it would be better to have this more formalized in a way that it can be encoded in a program, and so to make sure that our clients are doing the request in a proper way and also being able to parse the response accordingly.
Is it an issue of documentation, or is there some sort of a better documentation for the format of the response, or is it something else there? I'm just trying to understand.
That's actually a good point. I know that there was some effort in some people working on providing such a mechanism for REST services similar to SOAP, but I don't know the current status of that, so that's why I'm wondering if you are looking into that or the next step for you is maybe just to improve the documentation.
Can I address some of this, Natasha?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The advantage of SOAP-like interfaces is that you can use the service in a kind of a remote procedure call or even remote method invocation from within a program, where you don't have to deal with any of these formatting issues. It's all handled basically with tools that are readily available. But the fact is that the distinction between SOAP and REST is not that strong. I mean, you can, in fact, use REST pretty much the same way that you use SOAP. And that's one of the points I make in my course. So that if you have a formal definition of your interface, then you could just as easily use REST. So the important thing is the formal specification of the interface, not whether you're using SOAP or REST.
Okay.
Is that clear?
Thank you.
From our point of view, I think for the moment, we don't have any immediate plans to support SOAP. We do plan to stick with REST for now. And as far as specification, as always, you know, we could specify it more. Specific requests or sort of the types of things that you would like to see would be very helpful. And Misha, I think Michael Dorf, who is our the software lead on BioPortal, I think he's on the call, if he was on the call early on. If you have anything to add to that? Star three,
Misha.
Maybe not right now. So, again...
Hi.
Oh, you're there. You're on?
Yeah, I'm on.
Okay.
So, I mean, as far as you, whatever you said, Natasha,
we don't have any plans to introduce SOAP services. I think for now, REST has been pretty popular, and it's as far as I know, it's been serving its purpose. That having been said, introducing SOAP into our architecture is possible, and it's not going to require any major rework. But so from the architecture standpoint, we can easily integrate SOAP services into the stack. It's just it's a matter of whether we have the requirement to do so.
Yeah. So if there's thank you, Misha. So if there are specific requirements, we can try to do that resources meeting. But also in terms of, as Ken mentioned, you know, it doesn't have to be SOAP. It could be REST. That's a better specification. If there could be some specifics, maybe in a follow-up discussion, in terms of what exactly, say, given the service that we already have, you know, how would that look different to satisfy, say, Ken's requirements, we will be happy to look at that.
Yeah, hopefully we can have an offline, whatever, another mm-hmm. discussion about that specifically.
Yes, yes. Okay, so I think Peter was the next one with his hand up.
Yes, and thank you, Natasha. I have two questions, which I actually already typed out on the chat board, but I'll ask them here. The first one is for the NCBO team, specifically about scalability. Ken mentioned that he already is seeing some scalability issues and is possibly expecting more when it comes to when he has 40 students working on it. So let me first explain that for now the OR01 sandbox is running on a fairly small bandwidth, sort of at a T1 level connection. So if it's a bandwidth issue, then we could probably be seeing a huge improvement as I move the sandbox to the co-location facility, which is tier one and supports like 100 megabits per second into the backbone. However,
Peter,
yes.
So can we actually clarify from Ken which software was he having scalability issues with? Ken?
You mentioned
scalability issues. So what? Which software was posing scalability issues for you? Which? So if it was an OR or bar portal or something else?
This is the OR sandbox?
The sandbox. Okay, so this. Okay.
This
sorry, Peter's interrupted. I just wanted to make sure we were, you know, all on the same page.
Yeah, it was just the sandbox. And,
okay.
Yeah, we did hit some scalability issues and synchronization issues as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
I don't believe we did do one little thing at BioPortal, but that was there was no issue there as far as I know.
So if it had been a bandwidth issue, I think we could solve it from the networking point of view. But other issues, I believe Natasha, Misha, and your team is already have some plans. Maybe I'll pass it over to you guys to see. Where would you be expecting scalability issues, and how soon do you think it will hit? Of course, for the sandbox, it's not crucial, but as we scale up and as we make a production install of the OR, maybe those are the sort of points, the areas that we might want to discuss now at this session.
Sure. So I'll hand it over to Misha in a second. I'll just mention that as far as I know, and we've been kind of monitoring closely what our users say, on the bar portal, on the sort of ontology, we've had some scalability issues on some of the tools that use ontologies, like our annotator, but that was really annotator specific. So as far as the ontology library itself, We have not had, at least as of recently, any scalability issues in terms of, but we've never tried, you know, having 100 users hit it at the same time, for example, and I've tried to upload an anthology at the same time. But then, you know, we, so I'll let Misha talk about some ways that we kind of, in, we're trying to prevent serious scalability problems. Misha?
Sure. So we do utilize extensive caching mechanism in BioPortal. Just dealing with some of these terminologies like NCIT or SNOMED that might later be loaded in BioPortal, some of the tree traversals are really, really deep, and having them served via REST service means that the front end also needs to parcel that XML and then evaluate it on the screen. So we do use both back-end caching for some of the, you know, loading some of the, they call protege knowledge bases into the cache and then reusing them. We also use a lot of caching on the front end. You know, once, for example, once a particular tree is loaded, it's cached in the memory, and next time somebody accesses the same concept or the same tree, it's served from cache. So from that point, I think we've addressed some of the performance issues. I think the biggest bottleneck that we still have in BioPortal is the fact that we use single server for both the loading and retrieving of ontologies. So we host a whole slew of resources on BioPortal. And for example, when somebody submits a new, say, you know, this is an extreme case, but say somebody submits a new version of NCI Thesaurus, and we need to call the backend and have it parsed into the Protégé backend, it takes quite a bit of resources and time to do so. And while this process is happening, the same server is really serving all the incoming requests for BioPortal. And so that's the bottleneck right now, and the plan to address it is to create a more distributed infrastructure where the actual loading and parsing of content is offloaded to a different server, and retrieval of ontologies has its own dedicated server. I don't know, anything else that you can think of, Natasha, to add to this?
No, I think that covers it.
Yeah, Ken mentioned the synchronization issue. Ken, could you explain a little more? Elaborate.
What happened there was the students uploaded an ontology, and then from the same site, the same machine, concurrently uploaded a second one. And the first one, for some reason, there were a number of things that happened, like as he uploaded the second one, it seemed to redo the first one as if it hadn't been uploaded yet. It was a curious thing. So it's like the first one was uploaded twice.
Has this started in the quoted chat?
What?
Was that on the OR instance?
OR instance. So it was getting this kind of strange synchronization where two requests that shouldn't have had any interaction with each other did interact.
And you're certain that the student didn't specify the same file accidentally?
No, he was pretty careful.
As a general comment, if something like that happens, we would like to please send mail to support@bioontology.org so that we can look at it, because we were not aware of any, but maybe with some specific details of the steps, because we have not been aware of any, we've never encountered anything like that. And we ourselves often upload, you know, several ontologies to state, like from my machine or from a couple of people in this group who could do several ontologies one after another, and we've never had any issues. So I'm not saying there isn't an issue, but we would like to know more details and of when it happens.
Yeah, well, it's actually, I think it was John Grable that brought up this point on the chat board. Should there be some more systematic way of bringing up these issues I'm not sure that bringing it up on the developer news, a developer mailing list, is really the right way to approach a class of 40 students.
So if the issue is with the OR sandbox, then this is a good good place to do it. If the issue is on the BarPortal side, then the supportedbyontology.org is a good way to do it. And our bug track and feature track are public, so people can see what's there. And usually, you know, if during this discussion, you know, it's a mail to support, we figure out what the issue is. It's usually, if it is really a bug, you know, it does appear in our bug tracker. So, but for the OR instance, the developer list is a better mechanism for that.
Yeah, I agree. No, I was just wondering if using the mailing list with such a large number of students is a good idea.
So all your students are on the mailing list for OR developers?
Well, if that's the way we're going to do it, then they would be, yeah.
I don't know. What would be a better mechanism?
But these are just students, after all. They're not OR developers.
Maybe it would help if they, for example, funnel that through you, or if you have a TA first, just to, before they post the question, just to make sure it's really the issue that everyone needs to know about. Because sometimes, I mean, it could be a problem that the student is not doing something correctly.
Exactly. That's,
so in that case,
want
maybe
the whole community to be doing this.
So, but that means it seems that in that case, you would want someone on your side first to kind of be a moderator. Before those questions get posted on the list, maybe you can have a policy with the students that, you know, they first have to talk to, say, you or your TA to make sure that's really a problem on that cannot be resolved locally. Would that make sense?
Well, yeah, that would be fine. It's just need a, you know, confirmation that you think that would be the best way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, we would rather not have, you know, class-related discussions than, you know, students trying to figure out what this thing is about on the OR developers list, obviously, because we won't be able to follow that. But if it's really a question or concern about the functionality of the code, either feature request or a bug that you have found, then that list would be a good mechanism to do that, to address that.
Okay, so we'll set up a mechanism like that with a moderator.
Well, maybe, you know, have an internal list where this is discussed first, and then the conclusion of the internal list is posted to the external list.
Yeah, no, we can certainly do that. I mean, it might also be, I don't know whether you'd want to have a list like that more generally, because after all, there are other people that are going to be, if presumably the OOR starts to become more popular, we are going to have a lot of people that are newcomers.
But as developers, though, I mean, you're talking about...
No, not just the newcomers.
But newcomers who will use that as a repository or who plan to develop for it?
No. They will be presumably developing their own extensions. I mean, for example, individuals that are setting up a new OOR instance would be an example. And they, it's hard to say whether you'd consider that person a developer or just a user.
Because
they may be putting
developer.
Extensions.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to be honest, if you're internally, or the list, you know, where students can discuss kind of any issues that they address, if that could be some sort of archive list that we could look at, that would probably be more helpful than having that as a mailing list that, you know, comes into our mailboxes, so that we don't have to subscribe, for example, to see the archives.
I could definitely arrange for archiving.
Archiving is publicly available. So I know, for example, I know.
And public availability,
for the archives. So that could be another option.
Yeah, Peter Yim here. I just typed it onto the chat board so that we can remember it. When we have enough users, maybe 40 students is already enough users, we could start a listserv for OOR users and have, I mean, let's say your TA or internally some of your internal support to the more novice users. whether the messages could be archived, and our BioPortal friends would be able to access that quite easily.
That would be very nice if you could arrange that.
Yeah, sure. So maybe after I come back from my vacation in September, if that's
sure.
soon enough.
Oh, that's definitely soon enough. Class won't start until mid-September.
Okay.
Okay. So I think that probably covers that issue. So let me see who is up next.
I actually had a second question.
Oh, you had this. I'm sorry.
Still Peter Yim. My second question, also typed out in on the chat board, was this is to the entire panel. Is anyone already doing or have plans to do a generic front end to allow like XML schemas, DDDs, or maybe even database schemas to be translated and then accepted into OOR? I know this sort of means a scope creep for OOR, because originally, even at the Ontology Summit, we were only talking about ontology languages, RDF, OOR, and with Michael Gruninger's support now, first order logic. But is anyone already doing a sort of front end to accept XML schemas and database schemas? Because I mean, this will expand OOR utilities tremendously, especially when a mapping service is available. Anyone?
I'll let others on the panel take that. I guess that's your answer, Peter.
Okay. Well, I won't be able to join this. Okay.
Peter?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I'm going to try to do all of those. But, yeah, I definitely would hope that at least those aspects of, like, Wizzle and SOAP would be something that could be put into the OOR.
Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, I won't be able to join next Thursday's research issues question, but I believe this would be an interesting question to talk about, if someone could be kind enough to bring it up again.
I will definitely bring it up.
Yep, that's all.
Okay. So the next thing, I think, was Paul. The next hand was Paul.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I kind of typed some of my questions in there as well, and this gets back to the conversation that you and Natasha were having with Ken regarding how to handle feedback from users and maybe some disparate groups, because I know that we, you know, will have similar issues not wanting to inundate BioPortal with feedback about our particular repository. So I know that we'll be gatekeepers, but I'm wondering if there's been any discussion at a fundamental level about how OOR development will proceed either alongside or distinctly from BioPortal. Will OOR be doing its own releases? Will it have its own bug tracking? Will it have its own feature request list, things like that? Because I do think that the feedback that Ken will be getting from his students will be great to see, just as a even if his issues are distinct from the ones we're dealing with in our community, it would be great to see them. And eventually I think that we will want to be able to generate, you know, feature requests that might be distinct from BioPortal, or the BioPortal would get kind of upstream. And the development models I'm thinking of here are something like Ubuntu's relationship to Debian, or Drupal's core development team versus its module developers. Something like that may be effective. I'm just not sure how much thought has gone into this and how much planning.
Is Mike Dean still on the call?
Yes, I am.
So you, Mike, I suspect you would be probably in the best position to answer that. I know you and Benjamin were looking at this at some point. I don't know if you have any specific thoughts on how that should proceed.
Yeah, well, I think partly, you know, it's a question of sort of size of the efforts and level of support behind them. So, you know, initially, I think kind of leveraging and tracking, you know, the BioPortal project, having OOR, you know, track and leverage make sense. We discussed somewhat whether, it made sense to do branches, there's a fair amount of overhead, involved in doing that. So my thought at this point essentially is that we probably don't want to do it until there's a fairly compelling need to do that. Does that make sense and answer the question?
I think so. It's an interesting dilemma, though. It's kind of a chicken and egg. It's one of those things where unless there's a need to do it, you're not going to set it up, but it would really accelerate development were it to happen.
Right.
I'm sure it'll just be a continuing discussion on the OR conference calls and things like that. I would see it as something. I'm hoping it happens sooner rather than later.
So if there is someone with extra cycles who could kind of accelerate that process, for the moment, we're probably, to be honest, sort of on the environmental side, we're happy to support it, but we probably don't have anyone with the cycles to really spearhead the effort. But if there's someone in the community, sort of in the spirit of OR, who is willing to do that, we'll be happy to help.
I think at least conversations about future alignment with BioPortal or OR as a distinct product would be a good place to start. And maybe we can just schedule that for a conference call if it hasn't already been discussed thoroughly. Because what I'm thinking is that if BioPortal doesn't have the resources to support it, which is completely understandable, and, you guys are driving your features and requirements from, a community totally separate from I think anyone that we're dealing with, it makes sense to have a separate kind of product that we're working on. And it would just be good to talk about some models that might make sense. Maybe OR could have a longer release cycle so the developers are pegging their additional features and modules on something that doesn't change as rapidly as BioPortal. Or things like that. It would just be a good conversation to have at some point, maybe on one of the future OR conference calls.
Sure.
Well, can I address this a little bit, Mr. Kim?
Yes, please.
That definitely, I think, seems like a good topic for next week. Next week is long-term research issues for OOR. Another aspect of it is I have been working to try to find funding which would give the cycles necessary to do exactly what you're talking about. And one aspect of what I'm looking for in funding is funding to have outreach efforts to communities. If we actually get out, talk to these various communities and try to get them into the OOR. But of course, you need cycles to be able to support another community. You need to have some kind of funding. And the hope is that we can try to get that. I've talked to groups. Talk to program managers at the NSF, and they're actually quite encouraging. Although I don't think they have really as much money as we would need to do a really first-grade job. Does that help?
That would.
I think so, yeah,
I think funding. Funding is the best way to generate cycles.
Yeah, that's true. And the issues, as I say, that we're looking at are almost exactly the things you're talking about, Paul.
Although I thought, Ken, for the next week's panel, it might be a good place to clarify this. So your focus was more on the research issues rather than the kind of more mundane, how do we get this going and, which mailing list things should go to, right?
It's research issues. And the idea is that the hope is to put, the consensus about these research issues into any proposal we make. So it may not be, all that we put into the proposal, of course, but it would actually be very helpful to get feedback, to get consensus about this so that, we would have a fairly strong proposal with support from a large number of communities.
Okay. Sounds good. So I see Peter's hand up.
Yeah, I better try to be very fast on this one. I know we're running out of time. But inspired by Paul's remark just now, he used the magic word gatekeeping. We did discuss about gatekeeping in a big way during Ontology Summit 2008. And so far with the OOR sandbox, we circumvented it and sort of totally ignored gatekeeping. But by the time we deploy OOR production, which should be anytime soon, we should, as a differentiator, have some gatekeeping mechanism. So I don't think we have time to discuss it this week, but hopefully that should come up also next week, and hopefully someone could be working on it, I mean, if we have the cycles. So back to Natasha, who has the next 3 minutes to help us wrap up.
Yes, so I don't see any hands up, which is actually a good sign since we're at the end of 2 hours. So I think some of the issues that I'd like just to wrap up. So some of the issues that came up, and and as an aside, we can continue the discussion in the chat. So there are a lot of new interesting developments. There seems to be definitely a need for more active development on the OR instance in terms of experimenting with different mechanisms, maybe even federation model. But it would be nice to have someone, ideally with funding or maybe on a volunteer basis, to spearhead that as a separate effort. You know, someone who will to have that as a basically separate effort that someone is really leading. Maybe we can discuss that on some future telecons. Issues that we definitely need to look at as an OR community as issues of federation. I think everyone sort of agreed on that part. Perhaps scalability, if we identify any serious scalability problems. And then in terms of the APIs and interfaces, better maybe more detailed documentation, more detailed specification in some form of what these are so that it makes integration easier. Did I summarize all the key issues that came up? Anyone, or if anyone of the panelists or anyone who was on the call would like to add, please go ahead.
I think you summarized it very well, Natasha.
Yeah. Thank you very much for a great session.
Just thank very much all the panelists for a great discussion and for doing all the work that you're doing with our tools and with other tools and moving this forward. And if there are no further issues, I think we can adjourn. And I would like to thank Peter because I know sort of now watching it from a little bit from the inside, putting the panel together is tremendous work, and Peter is really great at it, so I would really like to thank him.
Well, thank you very much for the kind words, Natasha. Thank you, and thanks, everyone. Great session. So look forward to having everyone again next Thursday at Ken's session on research issues for Ontology Repository. Till then, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Natasha. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.